Well, folks, go Johnny G. Adivsha, August Morris Grat, Astola Gumsa, go Will Shivsha, go Moy. Shaw Jerry Adams Arish. So, what's what? Well, I'm recording this on Friday, and that's the anniversary of the death of Bobby Sands, so my thoughts are with Bobby and all his family and friends and comrades. And just want to reflect on a number of bits and pieces. And I suppose the first thing maybe to say to you is that there's been a considerable media coverage of the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, and frequently the story of that is told through the words and voices of the leadership figures, some of whom were women, but when the role of the women in talks was mentioned, it was almost exclusively in the context of the participation of the Women's Coalition. I actually think the Women's Coalition played its part, but the absence of any focus on the part played by the many other women from other parties does a disservice to their involvement, and that's the media. It's not the former members of the Women's Coalition. That's the way the media does this, and the way some of the establishment figures do this. So, when I was speaking at the Queen's University event on the first day on the panel Building Peace, the Parties, it was chaired by Nancy Soderbergh. I took the opportunity to read out a list of those women comrades who were consistently part of Sinn Féin's negotiating team. And they included Sheila Dara and Siobhan O'Hanlon and Sue Ramsey and Dawn Doyle, Geraldine Crawford, Bridge Curran, Lucilita Brannock, Barbara de Bruin, Dodie McGuinness, Chrissy McCauley, Rita O'Hare, Michelle Gildernew, and Mairead Keane, who was our first Northern American representative. She took up that post based in Washington in 1995. Mairead also played a significant role in D.C. and with her Irish American ally. So I do think it's important just to acknowledge and record the role, the very important role that these comrades played. The next thing I want to deal with is this whole issue of the coronation of the English king. And I want to say that I support the decision by the First Minister designate Michelle O'Neill and the Northern Assembly, Kion Corlia, Alex Maskey, to accept the invitation to attend the coronation. And they do so in their capacity as representatives of all the people of the North. And of course, as part of the representatives of all the people of the island of Ireland. And the vast majority of people who have talked to me about this initiative agree with it. Now, others do not agree. And I would be worried if this was not so. Republicans are against unelected hierarchies of all kinds, including monarchies. In fact, that's where republicanism came from, and that would be the case even if, God forbid, there was a native Irish monarchy. And we have many Irish elites. But it's even more so that we have someone else's royals foisted on us, or that some of us have suffered grievously, including our neighbours and friends in Ballymurphy and Derry, at the hands of the Parachute Regiment. So it's no surprise that some Republicans will be discommoded by Michelle and Alex's attendance. One young people told me it was a step too far. But not everyone in the North or in the rest of Ireland is a Republican. And our society is deeply divided, not least because of the English claims to jurisdiction here. Despite these divisions, we have agreed, and this is fundamental, that the people of our island will decide the future. Now, obviously, the Irish government this time don't want that, and the British government clearly don't want it. But my view, and Michelle and Alec's view, is that the union should be ended. That given the chance, we would be seeking to persuade the people, when they decide our future, that we should have self-governance. And we'd be seeking to persuade them of the merits of self-determination. And any sensible citizen watching the recent punishment budget announcement by the current British Secretary of State is bound to wonder why some local politicians embrace this arrangement. Folks, we can't afford the union. Why shouldn't we have our own tax-gathering powers? Why can't we set our own budget? Surely it's obvious that we don't need an English Tory, or indeed anyone from England, to rule us. The cost of the union is too much, on all counts, and the sooner it ends, the better for us all. Notwithstanding the current stance of the DUP, we are all well able to govern ourselves once the shackle of English rule ends. The Good Friday Agreement referendum on the future will decide that. Governing ourselves means everyone who lives here having respect and tolerance for each other. And that's what the First Minister designate and the Assembly Concordia's acceptance of the Coronation invitation is about. No matter about their own personal and political or ideological views, they're representing everyone as best they can. Now, those who expect a reciprocal gesture from the extremes of unionism are naive. That's not the rationale for this initiative. A First Minister for all is exactly that. Michelle O'Neill continues to hold and to act on her own Republican views, but as First Minister designate, she's demonstrating her commitment to be a minister for everyone. On this occasion, she and Alec will represent those who have a different attitude from them to monarchies, including people in England. So let's lead by example. Good neighbourliness based on equality of relationships is possible within and between the people of these islands. This will truly flourish when we get to exercise our right to self-determination and to determine our own future. Speed that day. And finally, just a look at the inquest into the Stardust disaster, which opened in Dublin last week. And it brought back many memories. The list of the dead from that terrible event in February 1981 is heartbreakingly long. The families of the 48 young people who died have been writing and reading poignant pen portraits of their loved ones into the record of the inquest. All of those who were killed were aged between 16 and 26. Over 200 others were injured. 42 years after that appalling tragedy, the Stardust families now have the opportunity, long denied them by successive governments, to get to the truth of the events of that night. The inferno that consumed the St. Valentine's Night disco in the Stardust at Artane in Dublin left scores of families devastated, and the communities of Artane, Coolock and Donnycarney in North Dublin reeling from the deaths of so many young people. Over 800 folks were crammed into the venue. The trauma of these communities was compounded by the subsequent decisions of state agencies to deny the families access to the truth of what happened that night. Accusations emerged quickly that Dublin Corporation had failed to carry out any fire safety inspections in the Stardust, which had opened in 1978 and was one of the largest of such venues in the state. On the night of the fire, there were 5 emergency exit doors. These were padlocked and had chains attached to prevent them being opened. Metal grills and steel plates covered the windows. People outside the buildings were unable to pull these off to help those trapped inside. The owner, Eamon Butterley, said that it was normal for the emergency exits to be chained. However, he claimed that the chains were taken off on disco nights, but on the night of the disaster, the chains were in place, and those fleeing the fire and smoke could not escape. A tribunal of inquiry was chaired by Mr. Justice Ronan Keane, and despite the tribunal determining that there were severe fire violations and that the owner acted with reckless disregard for the safety of his customers, Butterley received 580,000 punts in compensation. Why? Because although there was no evidence to support a conclusion of arson, the tribunal ruled that arson was probably to blame. The Director of Public Prosecutions also decided that there was insufficient ground to take action against Butterley. No one was held accountable for what happened. The only person ever taken to court was Christy Moore, who in July 1985 was found in contempt of court for his song, They Never Came Home. Christy was inspired to write the song after hearing one of the mothers in an interview use that phrase. His song contained the following lines. In a matter of seconds, confusion did reign. The room was in darkness, fire exits were chained. Hundreds of children were injured and maimed, and all just because the fire exits were chained. In addition, Butterley claimed that the words, just how the fire started, sure no one can tell, was not accurate. The court found for Butterley and Christie's album had to be withdrawn. In 1985, a compensation tribunal was established. To access compensation, the families had to relinquish their right to pursue any further legal action. In addition, there were two Oireachtas-appointed reports. None of these actions by the state satisfied the families, who continued to demand truth. They organised protests, held vigils and lobbied the political parties, and Sinn Féin supported the families throughout this process. A review, the Coffey Inquiry, 2008, ordered by the government, concluded that the claim of arson was not justifiable on the evidence. Following the publication of the report, the Dáil voted on the 3rd of February 2009 to acknowledge that the cause of the fire is unknown. The original finding of arson is a mere hypothetical explanation, and it's not demonstrated by any evidence, and none of the persons present on the night of the fire can be held responsible for it. Eventually, the campaign by the Stardust families resulted in 2019 and the then Attorney General Seamus Wolfe ordering a new inquest. This has now opened and is expected to last 6 months and to hear evidence from hundreds of witnesses. The Dublin coroner, Myra Cullinan, has said that she will not be bound by previous findings or past inquiries, and significantly, the High Court ruled last year that this inquest can include unlawful killings at a potential verdict. So our solidarity to the families who have kept faith, who never give up, and who have continued for that long 42 years to fight and to struggle and to agitate and to protest for justice for their young people who died on an awful night in February 1981. And it's appropriate, I think, that we go out with Christy Moore and his song, They Never Came Home. Sinné Cardja, Gunyuri and Ta Livsha, Lori May Latsa, August Livsha, Arish and Shachtan, the Kunabja, the Shachtan, Shahogin. Amor Orov.
St. Valentine's Day comes around once a year. All our thoughts turn to love as the time it draws near. Sweethearts and darlings, husbands and wives, pledge love and devotion for the rest of their lives. As day turns to evening, soon night time does fall. Young people prepare for the Valentine's ball. As the night fills with laughter, some families still mourn the 48 children that never came home. Down to the Stardust, they all made their way. The bouncer stood back as they lined up to pay. The records were spinning, who was dancing as well. How the fire started, no one can tell. In a matter of seconds, confusion did reign. The room was in darkness, fire exits were chained. The firefighters wept, they could not hide their sorrow and anger for those still inside. Let us remember the suffering and pain, the survivors and the victims of the fire in our town. Mothers and fathers forever to mourn, the 48 children that never came home. All around Dublin, the bad news had spread. There's a fire in the Stardust, there's 48 dead. Hundreds of boys and girls injured and maimed, 'cause the windows were barred and the exits were chained. Our leaders were shocked, grim statements were made. They shed tears as the coffins were laid. In Poppentry, in Cabra, Coolock and Dartain, the promises were broken time and again. The days turned to weeks, the weeks turned to years. Our laws favor the rich, or so it appears. A mother still waits for her kids to come home. Injustice breeds anger, and that's what's been done. Let us remember the suffering and pain, the survivors and the victims of the fire in our town. Mothers and fathers forever to mourn, the 48 children that never came home.